Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Steph and this is the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast, and I'm coming to you from Don't Buy Her Flowers HQ, so just in case there's some weird noises or forklifts in the background. What a week! This is the fifth and last episode of the business mini-series where I've been talking to founders from different industries. As Don't Buy Her Flowers is 8 years old this month, it feels like I've been doing this for quite a long time, but there is always more to learn. Emma, who I spoke with earlier in the week, made the point that the phase you're in always feels tough as it's new, but the things you were doing and found tough 6 months or even 6 years ago don't feel challenging in the same way anymore. So you're never done. You're always learning, basically. At the moment, I'm hearing from people every day who are considering or have shut up shop. And it was all over the news this week about Made.com going into administration. It's just a really difficult time. And often in business, I think people feel they need to pretend everything is okay. Understandably, because you don't necessarily want to be telling your customers that it's all going tits up. But I wanted to speak to my guest today because not all businesses go the distance. And I thought maybe some listeners would want to hear about that. And also that there is some light at the end of the tunnel. Beth Hewitt ran a shop local to me called Dolly Rock, selling gorgeous clothes and building a great brand, but challenges of retail and Brexit and the pandemic made it unsustainable. She talks with me about getting started and those challenges and making the decision to close, which at that point meant losing something that had been a huge part of our identity for 10 years. Beth has a kid at the same school as mine and we've known each other for years, but I haven't had an in-depth chat with her about business. I knew that she loved Dolly Rock and worked incredibly hard for it, and I can remember talking to her when she was closing and it was a really emotional time. So we talk about all of that. And a small interruption to let you know that this business series is sponsored by Natural Mat, an organic bed and mattress company who use exclusively natural, organic and sustainable material and make mattresses and beddings for grown-up and babies and kids, all handmade in Devon. You can learn more about what they do by visiting naturalmat.co.uk or visiting their showrooms in London, the Cotswolds or Devon. And an exclusive for us, if you use the code DBHF15, you can get 15% off your first order, which is valid up until the 31st of January. Okay, so on to the episode. Here is Beth. So I really wanted to talk to you because obviously I know that you had this most amazing shop, Dolly Rock, in St Margaret's, where we both live, and then you had to close it. We met years ago. I think I just started Don't Buy Her Flowers and I came into your shop and that's just right. Saw you as this amazing businesswoman who looked like she had her shit together. Yeah. And you had this amazing shop and you'd been going for a while.
Yeah.
So what was the story with Dolly Rock? And also I'd quite like to know a bit about before that, like what you were doing before Dolly Rock.
Yeah, sure. So I'll try and summarize it as much as I can. We opened Dolly Rock in 2011. So it was kind of after the big crash of 2008. And it was still, I mean, we were still a bit crazy doing it. And when I say we, it's because I did have a business partner for the first year. And due to personal circumstances, she had to exit the business. So that was my first kind of pivotal point in the business, actually, was whether I continue to do it on my own or whether I kind of just jump ship so early on within a year. And because it was incredibly intimidating, I was 29 with the idea of when I opened the business, and at 30 the idea of taking on the business on my own. You know, the financial pressure of that, but also the idea of, you know, kind of, I knew that we both had strengths in different areas, and how was I going to fulfill what she was, you know, really good at and stuff. So that was quite intimidating, but I made the decision to make the leap. And I look back really, really grateful that I made that decision, but it was quite a pivotal point in the business. But before that, my background actually was in design. So I did my degree at London College of Fashion in design, worked a bit in freelance design after I graduated, but was always in retail. So my first retail job was when I was 4 months before my 16th birthday for Topshop, which was like the place to work. And you got to wear your stock as well. I mean, and that was when Topshop was cool, like really cool. So that was amazing. And I stayed at Topshop for like 5 years throughout college and everything. So that was really good for me. And so I'd always been in retail, but after doing my degree, I did some freelance design, but wasn't that keen on the reality of design actually in the commercial industry. And then I was still in retail, working in retail management by then. And that took me to meeting my business partner. I was very, very lucky. I came into some unexpected inheritance and I was kind of thinking, what do I do with this? And then we'd spoken before about how amazing it would be to have our own place and how it would look. And we both very like-minded on what we wanted to create. So I made the leap and it was quite a leap and it was a bit crazy. And I think lots of people thought I was crazy. And I just got out of a really long relationship as well. So it was just, I think a lot of people thought I was having some sort of like crisis kind of thing. Because I just got out of an 8-year relationship, broken off an engagement. And yeah, I was just making loads of changes. I was just embracing a completely different path, but it was very, very exciting. And it was also, I was fired up, really, really fired up. And I think that's what you need to start. You need to really have a real passion and energy and a vision of what you want to create.
Well, I remember when I met you, so I think you were a few years in, and I remember you saying you hadn't had a holiday.
No, I didn't take a holiday for the first 5 years.
God. And is that something you'd do differently if you were doing it again?
Yeah, I think so, because you just burn out. You do end up burning out. And I don't think I realised at the time how burnt out I was. But I was very lucky that because I was at the age I was, I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have children. I didn't have, you know, a lot of things that I needed to invest my time in. So I could put all my energy and my effort into the business.
I guess when you did crash at home, you could just crash at home.
Exactly.
You weren't.
Okay. I mean, and I couldn't do that now. And that's the thing is, as your lifestyle changes, your business has to be flexible with you as well. And you probably found that as well. You know, you can't maintain that. It's not maintainable. I mean, I was routinely working 6 days a week because I'd be buying as well. You know, you do reach a point where you can't continue that way. And if, as you said, if I was to do it again, I think I'd allow myself, because it is allowing yourself to do it as well. It's knowing that you've got a team in place and not everything's going to fall apart. Like, you know, and even if it does, worst case scenario, you have a week where, you know, your sales drops and stuff. And even though, I mean, there were times that we couldn't afford that to happen. But later on, it got to the point where, okay, well, you kind of knew that things might not run as smoothly, or there might be certain things you have to put in place before you go, but you can do that kind of thing. And also I think it's being able to have a team that you can delegate to as well. And that took me a while to be able to form that team as well. So, you know, in those first couple of years, if you don't have that, then it is going to be the pressure and everything's going to be on you until you kind of build that support system.
How would you describe the style of the shop? Part of your thing was you source brands and clothing that wasn't necessarily, like, a lot of it was, I'm trying to think where it was from, like a bit Scandi.
We had a real mix actually. So it was, a lot of it was the Scandi brands, but it was trying to expose brands that might necessarily not get the mainstream exposure kind of thing. So for me, I used to always go and view a collection, and if they said that a key account, now a key account is one of the big boys kind of thing, like, well, I shouldn't say big boy, that's gender, but one of the big key accounts would be a big department store. And so if a key account had it, I would then be like, nah, I don't think I want it.
That's really interesting, because I'm like that with brand. We've got a mix of brands at DBHF, but there's always a mix of some small independents and then some big and mainstream, because people do want to see something that they recognize. If I see something and it's in all the shops and all that, it puts me off, because I'm like, well, it's not special. It doesn't give the customer that kind of taste of something a bit different.
And you learn your customer, you learn where they're spending, what they're spending their money on, what they like. And that's when you can, you know, change what you're offering basically. And we need to have some brands that people are aware of and people could recognize, because that's how you build people being able to trust in your selection.
So you started in 2011. And you closed the shop in 2021, is that right?
2020, no, at the end of 2020. Yeah.
So what, I imagine there's a whole host of things happening in those 10 years, but what happened?
I think it was a accumulation of things. And and this is where it wasn't just the pandemic. The pandemic was the last thing.
The straw that broke
the camel's back, really. Because I think, you know, retail had been really struggling on a journey for quite a while, especially women's apparel. I always joked, being like, I would be fascinated if I wasn't in the industry, looking at how the industry is struggling and how it's changed, because there was many things that contributed to that. One of the things is, you know, discount culture. And I think for small independents, trying to keep up with that, trying to compete in any way was just near impossible. But it trained the customer to spend in a certain way. And that was what was unfortunate, was it trained people to almost not want to resent spending, buying things at full price.
Full price, yeah.
And that really, that's a really tough one, because we haven't got the margins to be able to discount all our stock. And I think that's where as well, people don't fully understand maybe how a small retail operation works compared to a key account kind of thing, and
why they're delivery able to actually offer. Yeah, like free delivery, which is not really free, it's accounted for somewhere, but once people are used to that, then they're expecting it. So yeah, it'll be like, well, your delivery is very expensive. It's like, we don't make any money. In fact, we lose a bit of money on delivery.
Yeah,
because we want to keep it low, because we know people don't like that cost. But the big retailers
have trained your customer to believe in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is. It's from years and years of the customer's expectation being changed of what is the norm, what should be expected. And that's where we were really up against already quite a fight, I think. And I saw that change in customers' behaviour, and especially when we had the website. Online, there's even more discounting. And it became a bit ridiculous, even to the fact of like Black Friday became discounting at the beginning of October. You know, the summer sales were starting in June, and then there was flash discounting constantly. And when you have the same product as what somebody else has and they're offering 30% off, I don't blame them for going for the best price point. And it's very hard for people to make that decision to continue to support you when someone else is offering it at a cheaper price. And we'd get people even asking us to price match. And I'd be a bit like, I can't price match with, let's say, Office's 20% discount this weekend, because I've only just received this stock. And I, you know, and it's hard to explain that to people. But the structure of a small business is very different to the fact that we don't get discounts from the brands themselves for quantities or anything like that, you know, whereas the big key accounts do. So they're paying less for that product. So,
yeah.
And then Brexit really affected our customer spending, because I think, again, uncertainty around how the market might react to things, uncertainty around jobs, uncertainty around people's careers, everything.
I can see a correlation between when the news are having a massive shout about food banks and like all the disaster things that are going on. You can see it. So, and then, so like in June, May, June, suddenly there was a lot of talk about economic crisis. Then they went quiet over the summer, and which actually means that your customers come back a bit.
Yeah.
So you can see it. And it's like, again, it's really irresponsible, because some of the time the fuss is a fuss rather than actual news.
Yes.
And then that's having a massive impact. So it's kind of this self-perpetuating mess.
And I think it depends on your demographic as well, right? So for us, it's kind of, and we're probably targeting similar customers. It's the demographic that your customer is that is affected by these things often as well. So, you know, I was fully aware we were a luxury product, a necessity in any way, you know, and our price point was, you know, mid to high range. So we were when people were treating themselves. So when people are tightening their spending, we are the you know, you're one of the first things you do is actually, I'm not going to buy that. I'm not going to treat myself to that cashmere jumper, which is understandable. But it just meant that with Brexit was just a long-winded process that meant that uncertainty created a drop in spending for that period of time. So, and then the pandemic hit.
And then, and what did you do? So I know you were, when you could open, you were open.
Yes.
And had you had to get rid of a load of your team?
I furloughed my team. I furloughed my team first straight away. And so then that was the fun journey of just me trying to do online. I've got some of the most so funny pictures of my son on top of like 7 massive boxes in my hallway, because I had to get all my stock delivery to the house instead of the shop, because I couldn't be in the shop all the time. So it was just things like that. And then I was trying to get product online as quick as I could as well, but also try and promote online. And because I furloughed my team, they couldn't work for me in any capacity.
Online shopping and clothing did pick up.
It did, yeah.
But then it probably would, again, you're then back to competing with the brands who can offer the massive discounts.
It was also, we were then stuck in the situation where we didn't have the stock that people wanted. And again, this goes back to the fact that when you're a small business, we work on a basis where I'm buying 7 months prior to when it hits our shop floor. So it was just, it couldn't have been at a worse timing, because we had just received all our season stock. So I'm sitting on, and I don't mind saying, I'm sitting on £50,000 worth of stock that had just arrived in store. And I've just, my main means of filling that stock had just been taken away from me. My Bricks and Water store had just been shut. I'm sitting on that stock with only the website to try and sell it through. And my competitors are already discounting that stock. And some of it is in transit and they're already discounting it.
And they're already set up, right? They're already all set up for online, whereas you were trying to do it.
And they'd already negotiated their discounts with their brands. I mean, the other thing is as well, is I'm straight on the, as soon as we start hearing about this, we're reacting. And I was reacting. Straight away, I'm talking to my brands about, okay, how can we work together on this? Like, you know, what can we do? And they can't afford me to suddenly not take my orders. Contractually, I'm legally obliged to take those orders in. And this is where you really have to invest in your relationships with people, because I luckily had very good relationships with people. So I'm able to kind of just be like, how can we work together on this? But a lot of the key accounts were able to basically, because of their power, they were able to say, I'm not taking the stock.
Yeah.
And we were never able to do that. But also, would I want to do that? Would I want to put my brands in that position? I worked with a lot of small brands, and those brands weren't going to survive if I then turned around and said that.
Because we were so busy, we were picking up orders that had been cancelled, if that
Fantastic.
Makes sense.
So where taking, we were, yeah.
So actually, I think that helped our relationship with a lot of these brands who were suddenly having stuff cancelled, and then we'd be like, we'll take it. And
Brilliant.
So,
yeah.
And your team were furloughed, but were you still, did you still have to pay rent?
Yes. And that was one of the things that was really disappointing, was how our landlady responded to it all as well. I was very grateful for the support that we got from the government initially, and on the, you know, the initially on the first lockdown. And it was amazing that I could furlough my team. I was so grateful for that.
Well, that just would have been another layer for you to have to cope with, wouldn't it? Like the guilt and the stress of my team, who I care about, I also now have just got rid of. And it wouldn't have been your fault in any way. But I guess furlough for lots of people took away that guilt because you knew they were okay.
Exactly. Yeah. But the landlady didn't cooperate in any type of anything throughout discounting or anything. She was actually the opposite, which was really disappointing, because to me, I kind of found that most people were approaching it as, okay, everyone's in the same boat. Let's all try and keep each other afloat, kind of thing. But it's a huge overhead that we had to still cover.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
At what point did you, in that run up to the end of 2020, were you like, I can't do this anymore? Like,
what it was going into autumn winter, and it was the end, because when we reopened, there was I was so excited to reopen, and I was I remember being teary that first day, being like, I am so excited to reopen. But then we realized that the initial excitement just wasn't maintained. So people kind of came back in, they were spending, we went into sale, and that was, we had a good response to that. And then it was people just kind of spending, just kind of didn't maintain at that level. And I think people wanted to support us, and that was what was so hard, was when I announced that I was closing, people felt really bad that they hadn't, you know, I had loads of people being like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I wish I'd been able to spend, but you know, I've lost my job or this, da, da, da. And I was like, I never was resentful to people not being able to support us more. It was just the fact that people couldn't and they didn't. And it was just spending changed. And we were still sitting on a lot of stock. And the idea of taking an autumn winter, when I looked at my autumn winter buy that again had already been, I'd completed my autumn winter buy in January, December and January. So I was able to change that a little bit, and I was able to make some adjustments. But I couldn't, I was still obliged to take on quite a lot. And when I looked at that, I just thought, how on earth are we going to get through this? And I was faced with that prospect of, if we try, we could fail in a way that I could actually go into administration.
And you wouldn't be able to pay people, exactly. And you wouldn't be able to, yeah.
Then I'd be looking at the fact that my staff wouldn't get anything. And I had members of staff that had been with me for, you know, 6-7 years, and I cared about every single one of them, and I'd already had to make a redundancy at that point, and so I knew how horrific that was. But knowing that I might have to close my doors and they wouldn't be compensated for anything, and that I'd leave owing my brand a lot of money, that weighed heavily on my decision, because I then had to make a decision, well, do I take the risk and do it that way, or do I do it my way?
How did you feel emotionally?
I cried a lot. There were a lot of tears. At that point, I was a single mother. I was kind of weighing up a lot of things. And I was just like, I had to have an honest conversation with my sister. I remember my twin sister, who was just like, you can't risk everything financially yourself to keep it. And I know you want to. It's not that you don't want to. And I know this is going to be hard for you to do. But you've got to think about the fact that if this gets any harder, and this is me without knowing we were going to go into another lockdown at Christmas. But you know, she was just like, there's no guarantees of the recovery coming, and you're putting your whole, you know, your financial stability on the line, and you've got a dependent, basically. And it did, it took harsh conversations like that for me to be a bit like, okay, you know, the only other option would be to somehow try and do it in some way of my own way, and try and make it as positive as I could.
So it's almost taking control rather than it being I suppose, especially if you had such a kind of tricky period the previous year where you've lost control. You couldn't have control over decisions being made in government and all that other stuff. I know there will be people listening where there's loads of people who are having to quit and having to say, I can't do this anymore. Like I'm on various WhatsApp groups with other small businesses, or you know, I follow lots of people on Instagram, and you just keep seeing it, people going, that's it, I'm gonna have to shut up shop. And I feel like one of the reasons I want to talk to you is because you're down the line by nearly a couple of years.
I'm kind of on the other side.
Hopefully there's some positive to that, because I suppose, definitely. Did you feel relief? Was there?
I did, yeah, because I was doing it my way. I felt like I was doing it the right way. And I'm not saying that everyone would be in the circumstance that you have the time to do that. And that's not me knocking people that do go into administration, because they've given it their best shot and it's still worked out that way. Because there's going to be plenty of people who that is the scenario for them. That's not their wrongdoing. That's just because the way the cookie has crumbled. But
well, I think with business as well, it can change so quickly. Especially when you talk about 50 grand's worth of stock, like that can tip you over. If you suddenly can't sell that stock, like we've definitely having to manage cash flow and stock at a time when the predictability is totally gone from retail because of the last couple of years, and we don't know what's going to happen next. That is making it very hard. So it's not always people's fault. Well, it's not people's fault often. It's like you're having to take punts on what you think.
Yeah, and no one has a crystal ball. None of us have a crystal ball. No. Like, it'd be amazing if we did. But we're all trying to base our choices and our decisions on the information we've got to hand at that moment. But as you said, everything can change, and you can adapt to that as best you can. But sometimes you can't adapt. Sometimes you're just stuck and you can't adapt. And I think that was where we were at with our stock was I had, and that's why I started doing things like Dress Up Friday online, where I was doing this campaign where I would wear a very dressy outfit on a Friday. And there were loads of people that kind of got in on that. And that was great because that speared some kind of excitement around people, you know, buying things because they wanted to make themselves happy and they wanted to, you know, buy something lovely for the sake of it kind of thing. And things like that really helped, just to show some interest and to get some interest. But they weren't resulting in huge amounts of sales or anything every Friday kind of thing. But I think moving forward, when I decided to close on my own terms, I decided to try and do it in a fun way and try and give back to my customers who had supported me so much by doing an amazing closing down sale and letting my staff know that they were going to get redundancy packages, that I was going to try my very, very best to make them as generous as I could. And I was going to give them plenty of notice to be able to hopefully then find something else. And that was the best I could do. And I was able to have those conversations with my brands and say, we can't continue. Instead of taking the risk, I've made the decision, which I hope you'll support, to cancel out autumn winter, which meant that they were losing. A lot of them contractually could hold me to my contract. Some of them did, but it was very few of them that did. Some of them I had to take some sort of financial penalty for it, which I kind of saw coming. But most of them actually kind of respected my decision to try and do it in this way so that I didn't owe them money.
And that immediately afterwards, that feeling, how did you feel when you're kind of walking around, and obviously you live local to where you work, and you, prior to that, you had been full on for 10 plus years with this business. What was that like?
I think one of the hardest things was actually having those initial conversations with people. It was almost like telling people that you about a breakup when you're a teenager kind of thing, when you're like, and you try not to hold back the tears when you're kind of a bit like, we're not together anymore, you know, kind of. And I was just a bit, and I remember I cried quite a few times. I cried on the shop floor few times, and then the fluorescent neon signage went on the other window saying closing down sale, and that was when it really, really hit me. And it still makes me a bit emotional now, because I just remember the being brokenhearted, actually, and just being like, it's such a shame. But I did know deep down it's the right decision. And knowing now what I know, in terms of, we would never have made it through that Christmas.
So final question, is someone is looking at their business and going, I don't know if I can work this anymore, or they can see the writing's on the wall, what would you say to them?
I'd say definitely talk to people around you, because at first I think I was kind of taking it all on myself and not discussing it with my friends or family even. You know, you can discuss it with professionals, but also try and discuss it with the people around you, and so that they can give you their thoughts on things as well. But also weigh up your lifestyle, how your lifestyle will be, and weigh up what potentially could be in the future. Because even though it can be heartbreaking, it can open new doors. And, you know, there really is this thing about trying to stay optimistic. The minute I turned that corner, even though I had moments of being sad and being upset about it, the energy that I wanted to put into my closing down sale and trying to make it positive, can stay with the energy that you want to kind of move forward with, park the hurt and the upset. Because you will feel that. You're going to feel that. I still mourn my business, I think, a little bit, because I walk past it every day. And I'm glad it's taken on a new life. And I'm glad someone else is in the space. But I still mourn what I had. I still have people, when I talk to them, and they say, oh, we really miss Dolly Rock. And I do. I genuinely really, really miss it. But it doesn't mean that there's not something else that will be as fulfilling.
Yeah, 100%. It's not it's that the messaging that is coming out more about, when something ends, that doesn't necessarily mean failure, because you've got so much experience.
Well, I had to seek therapy to make sure that I didn't see it as a massive failure.
Yeah.
Because I know myself, and I know that the business, like so many founders, your business becomes almost your identity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where there's that little bit of a line where you can take that failure, and also you then become lost, being like, well, who am I? If I'm not Beth from Dolly Rock, if I'm not the business owner, if I'm not all those things that I used to be proud of, you know, I was proud of my achievements, and then seeing that, kind of not having that anymore, I was like, well, who am I now? Like, can I still hold my head up high and all that, you know, all those things. And of course you can, and of course you're more than what your business is, but that is a journey as well, of coming to the point where, you know, you're able to feel confident.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Confident in what's next and what could be next, and the possible, and be excited about the possibility of what's next. Just in case there's anyone listening that kind of knows of Dolly Rock, is now I am doing personal styling, personal shopping. So it's, because that's one of the things that I loved about Dolly Rock, was getting to work with people on a one-to-one basis and helping them kind of build their confidence around what they wear. So I'm on maternity leave at the moment, but soon enough I will be kind of back out there. But I have got a website and everything promoting that business. And I love still working with the community.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Beth.
No worries.
Massive thanks to Beth, and masses of luck to her for her personal styling business, which she is just getting back into after maternity leave, and I've put a link in the notes to that. Also thanks to Natural Matte for sponsoring this series, and don't forget they are offering 15% off their organic bedding and mattresses with the code DBHF15. So head to naturalmatte.co.uk for more information. And that is the last episode in this business series. Personally, I found it reassuring to hear from other founders about the variety of challenges they've faced and also the lessons learned. Can be quite a lonely role founding a business, and having connections with people that get it has come across as really important from everybody. And thank you so much for listening. Please do rate and review, and if you subscribe to the podcast, you'll get a notification when we're back with our next series. And lastly, if you're in the market for thoughtful gifts for your friends and family, corporate gifts for in the workplace, please get in touch with me and we would love to help. The website is don'tbuyherflowers.com. There's a contact form there, or message me on social media, and I'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much and take care.